The Mishnah. If someone died and three people want to collect from the estate, the wife, the Baal Chayiv, and the Yarshim, so the Yisayimim get the Metaltalin, according to Rabbi Akiva. But according to Rabbi Tarfon, the Metaltalin go to the person in the worst condition. Peiros, however, in the field, go to whoever was typhus them first. And the Gemara asks, what does person in the worst condition mean? That's a Machlaikis, who this refers to. Either it refers to the Yisayimim or the wife. We paskin like Rabbi Akiva, but only when he is arguing with his contemporaries. However, when he argues with his Rebbe, then we don't paskin like him. If one died and left over behemoths to the Yisayimim, and these behemoths were under the control of a Shomer, and a Baal Chayiv came and captured a cow from the Shomer to pay back his Chayiv, in a Din Taira, the Shomer said, the Baal Chayiv took the axe after the Misa. So since we hold, like Rabbi Akiva, the Tfisa won't help after the Misa, he'll have to give it back. The cow, meaning. But the Baal Chayiv said, he stole it before the death, so therefore he should get to keep it. Rabbi Nachman said, we believe the Baal Chayiv since he has a Migo. He could have said that he bought it. That pehe. If a Baal Chayiv is typhus something for himself, we say, kol ha-kaidem zacha, and he is kainet. But if the grabber comes to be typhus a pikadin from his friend, then if the tfisa hurts someone else, the tfisa is no good, since we say a typhus la Baal Chayiv b'makam shechab lacherem leikane. Even though Abaya was from the Bnei Eli, who were cursed not to have arichas yamim, because they were mavaza the karbonis, that's why they got that klala, Abaya was zeicha to arichas yamim anyway, because of his very special godless in Torah. There was a maisa that seven pearls wrapped in a sheet were given to Reb Misharsha, and he was nifter before he told his children what to do with them. And they didn't know if they should believe the man who said he gave the pearls to Reb Misharsha. It depends on which of the chazakas exist, whether we believe or not. If a person leaves money after he dies for a Talmid Chacham, he'll get big schusim in the Olam Ha'emes. So if someone left money and we're not sure if he meant to leave it for a Talmid Chacham or a neighbor, we assume he preferred a Talmid Chacham. If the choice is between a relative or a neighbor, then the relative goes first. But if the choice is between a distant relative and a close neighbor, then we say that it's probably to the close neighbor. Da pevav. If a malva sold the collection rights of his loan to a friend, and then he was meichel b'loan, the mechila works. If someone owes money to a malva, and a woman in a ksuba, and he owns land, and he owns cash, the malva, he should pay money, and to the woman, he should pay land. If he only has enough land to pay back one, then he pays back the malva. If not, it will discourage people from loaning money. Aye, but if he doesn't pay the ksuba, it'll discourage women from getting married. Our answer is a woman wants to marry much more than a man, so we're not really worried about this. But of course, in terms of lending money, people are not that interested in lending money, so if we mess around with them, they'll never want to lend money. The Gemara says 39 malkas are only given if a person is over on a leisaseh. But a mitzvah says say that a person passes up, like not sitting in a sukkah, we can give him even more lashes. And finally, we say if a get is placed in a tzidei rishus harabim, a woman is not kind of the get, since tzidei is not considered part of her rishus. The Mishnah. If someone appointed his wife as his storekeeper, or as an apitropos on property, he can make her make a shvua that she didn't keep any of the business money for herself. And in fact, the Gemara says, he can make her swear even for small things like dough and thread. The next Mishnah. If a husband says to his wife, I am absolving you from ever having to make a shvua, the shvua as we mentioned in the last Mishnah, so if a situation comes up, he cannot make her swear, but he can make her yarshim swear if they inherit it. Daf Pei Zayin. The Gemara. Depending on the exact lashon that he said vis-a-vis the neder, that will determine if the yarshim can force her to swear or not. The next Mishnah. If a woman took a partial payment on her ksuba, when she wants the rest of it, she must make a shvua as to what exactly she has already collected. The Gemara says the reason why she swears is because she is now being made the mitzvah, and a person is made the mitzvah, then it becomes a case of shvua midaraisa. But Rava says a shvua midaraisa is always a shvua that patters someone from paying. In addition, there are shvuas derabanan like Chen Vini al Pinkasai, who wrote down a purchase and the buyer disagrees. And finally, we say if one witness testified that her ksuba was paid, she must swear if she wants to collect. In any place that two witnesses could make you pay, one witness can make you swear. However, a shvua is never made on ownership of land. Daf Pechas. When one party is out of town, we'll only force a shvua by a ksubas isha, because we want to motivate the woman to get married. But it's a question if we'll do this for a Baal Chayiv, to force a shvua when he's out of town. We say that we don't force an apitropos to make these types of shvuas, otherwise no one will want to do this type of a job, and no one will be interested in becoming an apitropos. The Mishnah. If a woman wants to collect her ksuba, and but she lost the ksuba, but only has a get, then we must pay her, because the whole ksuba is considered a ma'isa bezdin. If she has the ksuba but she doesn't have the get, then he doesn't have to pay her. It's the same thing if a malva comes with a shtar, and Shemitah passes, and he can't prove if there was a prusbel or not. We know that normally if Shemitah comes around, all chayvas that were owed up to that point become null and void because of the Shemitah. So they got around this by making a takana called prusbel. Well, the only chayvas that come free during Shemitah are chayvas that were to normal people. But a chayv that was owned to Bezdin, that does not come free during the Shemitah year. Therefore, a prusbel is a shtar that basically says, instead of you owing a certain person money, it's as if you owe the Beis HaMikdash, so to say, you owe to Bezdin, you owe them money. Therefore, since you owe it to them, that's not butl when it comes to Shemitah, and the loan will still be required to be paid back. So the Leva does not have to pay in this kind of a case. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel made a takana. After Goyim made a special takana that we're not allowed to do mitzvahs, that a woman can claim her ksuba without a get, and a malva can collect money even without a prusbel after Shemitah. The Torah states in Devarim that all debts are automatically cancelled by the Shemitah year, as we mentioned, and no longer required to pay. This takana of prusbel is learned in the Gemara in Gittin, Daf Lamed Daled, Amud Beis, that Hillel enacted a procedure to circumvent this automatic debt cancellation. Why did he do that? This was because of a concern that creditors would refuse to lend money to people because of their concern that their debts will be cancelled by the Shemitah. Hillel instituted the use of a prusbel. He said that a creditor can protect his debts from the Shemitah cancellation by drawing up a prusbel before Shemitah. Thus, the halacha is that after Shemitah, a debt can be collected if the creditor has a prusbel which he can show. Generally, the rule is that his word alone, claiming that he had a prusbel and he lost it, will not enable him to collect the pre-Shemitah debt. Rather, he has to produce the actual prusbel in order to collect the debt. However, as we mentioned, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, he maintains that certain times an exception is made and the debt can be collected without actually producing the prusbel itself. He says that b'shas hasakana, in a dangerous period where Jews were forbidden to do Torah mitzvahs because of anti-Semitic governmental decrees, people were afraid to retain the prusbel in their possession so as not to incriminate themselves as one who fulfills the Shemitah law. If Goyim would come and search the house and they would find the prusbel, they'd get into trouble. Therefore, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel said that during these times, we rely on a person's claim that he initially had a prusbel, but he lost it, and is consequently given permission to collect his debt, even without producing the actual prusbel document. The Rambam asserts that this halacha Rav Shimon ben Gamliel is not limited to shas hasakana, a dangerous period of time per se. He rules that once this halacha was put into place, it was never removed. He rules, as indicated by the term of mehasakana v'eilach, that regardless of whether there is actually a sakana or not, the halacha Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, which allows one to collect the debt without actually producing the prusbel, remains intact. The Rabbeinu Yoina also rules, as the Rambam, that the halacha of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel remained indefinitely intact, even today. He explains this to be due to the concern that our situation can revert at any time to a shas sakana, as long as we are in Golos. Daf Peites, the Gemara. We see from our Mishnah that we always write a shaver, a receipt for a husband, after he pays the ksuba to his wife. Even though this is really a machlokes and Baba Basra, if we do this or not. If she doesn't have a get, and there are no edim if the divorce actually took place, we cannot believe her to receive ksuba money, since we have no raya that she's actually divorced. Not only does a fully married woman get ksuba money in the event of a divorce, but even an arusa gets ksuba money, and even the taisefes ksuba, except according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who says she only gets the basic part of the ksuba, the 200-100, but does not get the taisefes. Related, a kayin can only become tamei for a wife if they actually had nesuin, i.e. chuppah. But if they only had erusin, then he cannot be matama for her. The Mishnah. If a woman comes to Bezdin with two gittin and two ksubas, she collects both. If she had two ksubas but one get, she only collects one, or vice versa. The Gemara says the purpose of ksuba number two was to add on some extra taisefes ksuba above and beyond the 200-100. Daf Tzadik, the Mishnah. If a katan was married off by his father and a ksuba was written for the wife, the ksuba is kayames even after he becomes a gadol. A ger who converted with his wife, the ksuba that was written before they were gerim, before they were Jewish, is also niskayim. And the Gemara says, Rav Huna holds that this Mishnah only is mechuyev him on the 100-200, not on the taisefes ksuba. Rabbi Yehuda says he is even mechuyev on the taisefes ksuba. This marks the end of this parak. Now let's begin parak Yud, the 10th parak, Mishahaya Nosoi. The Mishnah. A man was married to two women, and he dies. Both women come to collect their ksubas. The earlier dated ksuba has the first right to collect. If both women died, the children each collect from their own mother's inheritance. If, however, the wife dies before the husband, so she gets no ksuba, and he remarries, then he dies, so her children inherit the money due to ksubas ben indichrin. However, the wife number two who collects ksuba due to chayv has kadima before the yarshim of number one who are collecting due to Yerusha. The Gemara. If a later Bal Chayv comes and is typhus before the earlier Bal Chayv, it can be chal, although lechatchila you shouldn't do this. Ksubas ben indichrin does not have a din of a chayv, which would be allowed to be collected from nechasim at mishubadim, but rather it has a din of Yerusha, which cannot be collected from nechasim mishubadim, but only from nechasim b'nei charin. Benanis and Rabbi Akiva argue. If one wife dies while the husband is alive, and the other dies after his death, one holds that the children of the first wife are entitled to ksubas ben indichrin. The other holds, in this case, the children of the first wife are not entitled to ksubas ben indichrin. Daf Tzadik Aleph. However, all agree that after a ksuba is paid, there must be some money left to be mekayim the mitzvah d'oraisa of paying off the Yerusha. The Mishnah. If a man was married to two wives, and they both died, so technically none of the yarshim are entitled to a ksuba, but they do get to split the ksuba equally if the ksubas were originally equal in value. But if one is more valuable, each side takes the value of their mother's respective ksuba. The Gemara. If the property depreciated, the yarshim get to reevaluate it at its original higher value for value purposes to see actually where it all falls out. Abaye said that if a father dies, if someone's father dies, it's a mitzvah midrabanan for the yusaimim to pay back any chayvas that the father owed. We know that if a man dies and has outstanding debts, his creditors can collect their debts from the karka properties of his estate, from the chasim mishubadim. They cannot, however, collect from the metaltalin of the estate. The Gemara here says that although the heirs, the yusaimim, are not compelled to repay their father's outstanding loans, lechatchila, where there is no karka in the estate, nevertheless there is a mitzvah for them to do so out of respect for their father. Rashi explains that they are fulfilling a mitzvah by paying off their father's outstanding debts because they are in effect protecting the honor and good name of their father. Whether or not this mitzvah extends so far as to require children to even dip into their personal resources, that's a matter of dispute amongst the authorities. The Rashba asserts that not only are they required to use the recently acquired inheritance for the purpose of repaying their father's loans, they are even obligated to spend their own money for this purpose. The Rashba, however, draws a distinction. He says that when there are funds available from the inheritance and the children can be compelled by Bezdin to repay the loan. If, however, no inheritance is available, they are not compelled to repay the loan from their own money, albeit they have a mitzvah to do so. The Rambam, however, disagrees and rules that this mitzvah of repaying the outstanding debts applies solely to the inheritance funds. He is of the opinion that there is no obligation at all requiring them to use their personal money for this purpose. The Agos HaShri notes that there was a similar discussion in the Gemara in Kedushin, Daf Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, concerning the general mitzvah of Kibbutz Avayim. Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that the mitzvah requires a son to spend his own money when necessary to honor his parents. This view appears to be consistent with the Rashba's opinion requiring a son to spend his own money to protect the honor of his father by repaying his outstanding loans. Rav Nosson, however, maintains that the mitzvah of Kibbutz Avayim only requires children to spend time and effort for their parents' honor, but does not require them to spend personal money. The view of Rav Nosson seems consistent with the Rambam's position, but does not require children to spend their personal funds to uphold their father's honor by repaying his loans. The Agos HaShri thus concludes that since the halacha follows the opinion of Rav Nosson, therefore here too in our Gemara, the halacha should follow the Rambam's opinion, exempting the children from having to spend their personal money. Daf Tzadik Beis. Rav Nachman said if Yusaimim collected land that was owed to the father, the Bal Chayiv can later come and recollect the land. The Gemara says if Reuven sold all his land to Shimon, and Shimon sold one of his field which is Beninus quality, to Levi, and someone who Reuven owes money to comes to collect money from the Lekuchais, he can collect from either Shimon or Levi. But if Levi bought Ziburius or Idus from Reuven, the Lekuchais can only collect from Shimon, because he contended that he purposely did not buy Beninus so as to protect against this very possible occurrence. Abaye says if Reuven sold a field to Shimon with achrayas, meaning if a Bal Chayiv takes a field away from Shimon, Shimon can ask Reuven for a refund. So if the Bal Chayiv came to Shimon to collect, Reuven can try to go and convince the Bal Chayiv not to push for the money. And the Gemara debates who exactly the Bal Chayiv has the din Torah with, Reuven or Shimon. Taisvis is bothered by why does it really matter? If he sues Reuven, Shimon will have to pay. And if he sues Shimon, Reuven will have to pay. Daf Tzadik Gimel. A person is considered to have made a chazakah on the purchase of land once he is chidayish hamitzri, once he steps into the boundary of the land and walks around sort of feeling like he's the balabas. Mishnah. One who was married to three women and then he died and they came to collect their ksubas. One wants 100 zuz, one wants 200 zuz, and one wants 300 zuz. But the estate has only 100. We divide the estate equally. However, if the estate has 200 zuzim, we give 50 to the first one, 75 to the second, and 75 to the third. If it's 300, we give 50 to the first, 100 to the second, and 150 to the third. And if three people put money in an investment pool, and its value in the investment pool all declines, they split the new balance that's left over equally between the three of them. And the Gemara says, our Mishnah is like Rabbi Nosson, who splits the ksuba money in unequal amounts. One gets 200, one gets 100, etc. But Rabbi says we split the estate equally between all three. According to Shmuel, if two people invest in something, one puts in 200 and one puts in 100, once they divide the profits, they divide it equally between both of them, even though one put in more than the other. But they only divide equally if they bought a cow for the purpose of labor. So the fruits of labor have an equal share between the two of them. But if they bought the cow for the purposes of shechita, and they shechted the cow, the profit from the meat is split kefi the investment. So if one person invested two-thirds, he would get two-thirds of the meat. One person invested one-third, he would get one-third of the meat. The Mishnah. One who has four wives, and then he dies, so number one has first rights to the assets to collect ksuba before number two. But all must swear that they didn't already collect ksuba money. Number four doesn't have to swear at all, but according to Bananas, she does have to swear. Taf Tzadik Dalet. The Gemara. Two brothers or two partners who have a court case with someone. One of the two brothers decides to go to Bezin to fight the case, but the other one decides to stay home, and they lose the case. The brother who stayed home cannot go to the Bezdin and say, Atlav Baldvarim Didia, you my brother who went to Bezdin for me, I don't consider you my brother and you're not none of your business. He cannot represent me, basically, that's what he's trying to say. I want to go to court again. And when I'll go to court, I'll win the case. No, he can't do that. Since once number one went to court and number two sat home and didn't do anything, then automatically number one became a shliach for number two. So the case is now closed because the Bezdin already paskened on it. Two people came with two shtaras dated the same day, but they bought a specific piece of land. So who gets the piece of land? Rav says they split it in half. Shmuel says the Bezdin judge it, depending on who they feel is the likely owner, since he holds Ede Mesira Karsi. That's Tzadikei, the Mishnah. If someone has two wives, and he sold his field, and wife number one had written to the Lekach that she gives up her rights to this land in case the Ksuba is Chal, she in effect does give up her rights. The Gemara says that it's possible that wife number one can claim she didn't really give up her rights to the land. She only did this, she only made it that way, or sort of said that in order to please her husband. This transaction, this particular question, is a machlokes tanoim. Rav Meir says she loses her rights. Rav Yehuda says she can say she didn't mean it, and she can still get a piece of the land. Our Mishnah is like Rav Meir. We know from the Gemara in Gittin, Ein Ephraim min chasim mishubadim v'makam sheyesh b'nei charen. When a person comes to collect a chayv, you cannot take from Mishubadim, from land that was already sold, as long as there are other existing assets to take from, even if these existing assets are ziburious, poor quality land. What if the B'nai Charin that exists get ruined by a flood, and therefore there are no B'nai Charin? Can you then go and collect from the Mishubadim or not? Our answer is yes, she can, at that point, collect from the Mishubadim. We know that any karka property owned by a debtor at the time of a loan becomes automatically Mishubad, mortgaged to his creditor, if there was a Shtar Halva. Therefore, when a loan is due, the creditor can collect payment by confiscating these properties. Even if these properties were subsequently sold, the creditor can extract them from the hands of the lekach, from the buyer, since they are considered mortgaged to him. The Gemara postulates, however, that a creditor has no right to collect his payment from the lekach as long as there are b'nei charin, unsold property in the debtor's possession, as we mentioned before. Thus, a buyer who wishes to protect his acquisition from being confiscated by a creditor should ascertain prior to the sale that the seller has sufficient b'nei charin in his property to repay all of his outstanding liabilities. The Gemara concludes, however, that this course is not fail-safe, because in the event that the b'nei charin get ruined, for example, there's a flood, the creditors are then empowered to collect from the lekuchos. There's a dispute amongst the authorities as to the halacha with the remaining b'nei charin were seized by bandits. The Ritva is of the opinion that such a case is tantamount to being flooded. The creditor, therefore, has the right to collect his debt from the lekuchos. The Rajba, however, disagrees and maintains that losing the property to bandits is different than losing it to a flood. In regard to bandits, he says, that Saif Bala Israelipo, meaning that in most cases bandits eventually receive their deserved downfall and are then forced to relinquish their unlawful acquisitions through a court case. The Rajba, therefore, is of the opinion that the creditor is not empowered to collect from the lekuchos, since a possibility exists in this kind of a case that eventually he will be able to collect his debt from the B'nai Charin field once it's returned to the original owner through a psak of Bezdin. And at this point, we will conclude our share.